JD Bunkus, Ailish Borfar, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 59 of the Fan. I just came across my timeline that it's likely that this is going to be the hottest Super Bowl on record, which is kind of surprising. I would have guessed Florida for sure, but this leads me to there's no way that it's going to be hotter in L.A. than it is in Florida because of humidity, right? Like, there's definitely a Florida Super Bowl that was out there where that dirty, sticky, muggy Florida weather. Like, I'll take that California heat all day. This is not the hottest Super Bowl, right?
I mean, I'm not a meteorologist. I can barely say it, as you just heard.
Meteorologist. You can't say. I wish you were trying to pretend to be a meteorologist so that you showed up at the party where I go, Ailish, let's play a game where you pretend you're a meteorologist. And then you go, hello, I'm Ailish. I'm a meteorologist. I go, okay, yeah, she's not that. So what do you really do, man?
It's like annoying when you look at the weather and it's like, it's -5 out, but feels like -20. And you're like, okay, is it -20 or is it -5? So for the heat, the humidity, I find that that is even worse. Like a dry heat, you just like, okay, it's love hot. It. But that sticky heat, it's like gets in your lungs. It's like you're sweating. It feels like you're in a sauna. So it'll be nicer to play in LA than for sure than in Florida.
They'll be fine, is what I'm saying. I don't want to hear this be the story of Super Bowl weekend. These guys go too hot.
It's too hot.
So also going out west, the Toronto Maple Leafs with Austin Matthews. So started off with some just good news, right? Austin Matthews goes down. He has an injury. He hits his head. To me, it looked like Matthews hit his head on the opponent's glove, which was good because at first I thought it was a knee and people went, oh, is this going to be like a Tavares type thing? Nah, it looks like he goes off the glove down. Still hard contact, still a tough play, but looks like he's okay. Also seems like Jake Muzzin is back. Sheldon Keefe saying to media, I believe yesterday, because I saw it yesterday, so I assume it was yesterday, that Jake Muzzin, quote, looks like himself, end quote. So let's start with this because there's a couple of different things I want to discuss previewing this West Coast trip heading into Calgary, who again played last night, won old JD some money. What do you expect from Jake Muzzin at this point? Do you expect him to be an elevator? Do you think that we're going to, because we've discussed it earlier of, hey, this is the now stretch run before the deadline. This is the last month before the deadline. Are you going to find out, what are you going to find out about this team? One of our biggest keys was how healthy does Jake Muzzin look? How good does Jake Muzzin look? Where are we at with what you want to see from Jake Muzzin this next month as he returns and quote-unquote looks like himself? When Sheldon Keefe says looks like himself, what does that mean to you?
Well, as somebody that's had a couple concussions and had to come back, it's a bit of a curve. Like, you definitely don't feel like yourself right away. So it's great to hear that he's feeling like himself. In an NHL level game, I think he'll be a little bit cautious about being a tough guy, getting in the corners. I just feel like there's that little bit of hesitancy. But what I hope that I see from Jake Muzzin is that he can just help with the minutes that Sandin and Liljegren have had to play. And just having an extra body back there will be a positive for me because they've been pushed quite a lot. They've had to have a huge step in terms of play, and I don't think that it was always the most positive. I think they looked a little bit overwhelmed at times, so having another body in the lineup for me is a positive, whether he's back to 100% Muzzin or not. But I think this next month is really important because we talked about it and how, what is Jake Muzzin's expected next couple months? Is he going to be decent? Is he going to be great? Is he just going to be a body? Is he going to be able to be healthy throughout the playoffs? That is what I need to see from Jake Muzzin. And I think I'm going to give him a week or two to improve or to impress me. I definitely think it's tough to come in, step in, you know, go on a West Coast trip after being sidelined due to a head injury. So I'm going to give him a little bit of time and space, but I just think we'll see a shift dramatically, hopefully, with the two rookies basically getting a little bit less time, and maybe that'll give them more opportunity to have meaningful shifts and not just long, lengthy shifts that they have to play because there's nobody else.
Blake?
In the short term, I'm not even looking for that much in terms of the effect on the other defensemen. Like, sure, it'd be great if he can allow Sandin and Liljegren to be in a better usage spot, or, you know, Hall and Dermott, whoever's beside him, suddenly look more functional. Honestly, I just want to stop having those moments that we had for the first half of the season where it's just like, oh, Jake Muzzin looks slow, or, oh, Jake Muzzin looks old. And I don't know how much of that was like, there was a little bit of injury stuff last year. Like that's probably the spin you'd want to put on this in terms of hope is, hey, he also had that groin thing at the end of last year, and he looked pretty banged up to start the year and worn down. Maybe, obviously, this is not how you want to get the rest, but maybe in the long term it has a net positive here. Everything I'm looking for is, like, does this look like a Muzzin I trust? Yes. And not a Muzzin that I'm looking down, you know, I can't help but think, oh, this is Muzzin at 32. What's the age 34 year going to look like? That's all. I mean, that's a fairly low bar for a guy who's been as good as Jake Muzzin to clear, but that's step one.
So there's a couple things for me, but I like what you said, Blake, especially just because, yes, to me, this is very much a, does he still look slow 3-4 games into him being back? Does he look like he's lost a bit of a step? The other thing with Muzzin is the guy, when he first came to Toronto, was a real physical presence for them. And they were missing that, and so when they ended up getting him, it stood out especially. But I always am curious to see when guys come back from injury, especially one like that, whether or not they're willing to engage in the physical play in the same way, or whether they're looking a little bit more cautious and hesitant. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, to me, actually, the Muzzin eye test stuff is far more important than whatever his analytics, quote-unquote, are going to be. This is important for perspective, though, because this was raised by a couple of guys that I really like on social media, which is Kevin Papetti and my buddy Anthony Petrello, which is, if you look at Justin Hall's numbers this year, his expected goals for percentage is up from a season ago. And Jake Muzzin with Justin Hall, the two of them together, they've only been outscored by two goals despite having the toughest matchups every single night. Now, obviously, those are affected by the fact that the Maple Leafs on almost every given night are playing inferior opponents, and the team is really good overall. They've had great goaltending, right, that has probably saved them from some bad one for long stretches of, especially when Muzzin was playing. Muzzin has been out during the goaltending taking a dip. They have an incredible forward group that scores prolifically this year. So, yeah, do I take those numbers as, oh, we're all wrong with our critiques of these guys? No, I think it's on balance something that is probably, though, a little closer to the middle. There are always, every single year, are players that you're allowed to criticize, and then there are players that you're reluctant to criticize, right? Publicly, because you know that you'll end up getting some backlash, or you'll end up getting more retweets if you make fun of the whipping boy, right? Muzzin and Hall became a very safe tandem to rip on when they make mistakes. You don't make fun of Matthews the same way, or if Morgan Riley or TJ Brody have a bad turnover, or even if Sandin does it, it's more hesitant, I would say, for people to point that out. They go, it's a younger player. The expectation of those two as the shutdown line this year has been, be perfect or someone is going to get on your ass about it. So I'm going to try and be pretty measured with the way that they play, but I think I'm very much going to be looking more towards what Blake had to say there, which is, what are the physical signs of Muzzin? And then not just trying to make it an echo chamber or confirmation bias chamber, but simply, yeah, is he getting beat a lot? Is he not really hitting? Is he not playing physically? Mm-hmm. Is he not clearing the front of the net? Those kind of indicators to me are going to be important as they head into the deadline, because maybe, just maybe, they need to go out and get somebody that helps elevate him rather than the other way around.
There are 19 games somehow still before the trade deadline.
Insane.
Lots of time to get a good look at him.
Well, kind of, but they play basically every second night, so it's like
they also play. They also play not very good teams for the most part.
Yes.
So there.
Well,
there
then maybe that'll make him feel a little bit more confident.
Well,
and a
this
little
is
bit
what I was
going to
ask.
Get that under
like,
his
it's
belt.
It's 19 games. Maybe he sits a couple of the back-to-backs. The competition isn't super high. Like, Ailish, what size sample would you need to feel comfortable with? Okay, Muzzin's back to being Muzzin.
I think I want to see him after this road trip. I want to see how he does with the road trip. And then, what is it, next week they're back after they play the Kraken on Monday. They're back on home ice Thursday the 17th. I feel like that's is that too little time? I think that's like the get the rust off, get through the head injury, feel confident in yourself. And then, I don't know, like, I just, it's tough because I as we just said, we want to see how he does with getting his head injury secured, but he did just have 6 games of rest and the All-Star break. So I think you're right about the other tangible things need to be there. He needs to be looking faster, looking stronger on his stick. Those things are important, and like they, I don't think they correlate so much to the actual injury. That's just more like, are you a solid player still?
And he also gets a little bit of a ramp up where, yes, the schedule is about to get very, very condensed, but they don't have a back-to-back until 21st, 22nd. And that's
it's
Montreal,
a good time to come
Columbus.
Back, yeah.
Yeah, Montreal-Columbus is about as light as you're going to get on a back-to-back there. So, yeah, I think that that's a reasonable, you know, I don't think I'm going to evaluate much more on this road trip than, you know, does he look healthy? Does he look all right? But, yeah. You're talking 6, 7, 8 games before those Dubas conversations have to get a lot more serious.
It is just, again, a reminder that they are very much an exercise in confirmation bias this year. And it should be pointed out anyways that, yes, they have the toughest job defensively on this team. And so when they are on the ice and there are goals being scored, it shouldn't just be a universal where they were on the ice with the goals being scored. It should be a very much how are these goals being scored, and that will be the process. Yeah, I don't think that Muzzin sits any back-to-backs. I don't think that they handle them that way.
I think that would be a bad sign, actually.
Yeah, it's true. This is still hockey, right? Like, this isn't basketball. Mm-hmm. This isn't, hey, we're going to rest. There's the only times you've done that. Like, think about the amount of times they've sat Spezza and Simmons over the last couple of years. What?
Yeah.
You can count them on one hand where they've done that with those two.
There are only two back-to-backs during that, like, between now
they
and the deadline. So, yeah,
Jake Muzzin won't allow it.
The argument for that is, like we just said, there's 19 games before the deadline. There's two back-to-backs. Those are opportunities to get that seventh defenseman mixed back in. That would be the sales point. Not you don't tell Jake Muzzin, hey, man, we're worried about you. You tell Jake Muzzin, hey, you're just coming back and we're going to work another guy in. But I don't think this is certainly not a Raptors-level rest discussion.
And guess what? The Raptors are the wrong team to point out, because if it was the Raptors, Jake Muzzin would be playing 30 minutes a night. But yes, I don't see that happening. I think we've learned all we need to learn about the Leafs' seventh defenseman. The seventh defenseman right now is Travis Dermott, and he needs a change of scenery. Travis Dermott needs to be playing for a different hockey team. I'm sorry. This is a guy that I believed in for a very long time, but eventually you got to show something. And for me, the guy has taken a step back. He's the clubhouse leader in what is it that you say you do here, right? I've expressed my frustrations with Timothy Liljegren. I think that he is not the right sixth defenseman for this team this season, but at least I can see the positive things that he does. I see a guy who can go downhill very well. I can see a guy that can snap a pass. I see someone who, against at least bad opponents like the Devils game before the All-Star break, has tried to play with a little bit more physicality, has taken some positive steps forward. With Travis Dermott, I cannot tell you a single solitary thing that has made me feel really good about the player. Gotta go. Don't need anything else to learn about it. If some other team views him as a somewhat attractive buy low, I wish him all the best of luck. But yes, it's not going to work out here in Toronto. So, the other guy, Jack Campbell, returns tonight. And no, he's not returning from a huge hiatus, but will he return to Saturday nights? Because he missed two in a row. And yeah, Blake, you said it. It's going to be a split. But we thought that it was going to be a little bit more of a back-to-back. Jack gets the net, blah, 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 blah. This is the question. Are we sure? Are we certain? Are we certainteed that Jack Campbell plays Saturday night, regardless of result tonight?
I think so. I would say so. Because we had Mike Fuda on, and he was talking about like the growth of Jack Campbell and the mental state of being a goaltender throughout this. And I think he really needs to string together a couple really good games. And that's hard to get into a rhythm. And that's why I think Jack Campbell had a little bit of a down, was it December into January, is because that rhythm was interrupted with the COVID break. And then, you know, he didn't have the greatest of starts. And I think we need to see Jack Campbell start to get back to the September, October Jack Campbell that we saw. And the best way to do that is to get some consecutive good games in a row. you know, they play Calgary, then they play Vancouver, and then they play the Kraken. And, you know, I really think that that could be a three games for the Leafs to win. And there's no back-to-backs. There's a day in between all of those. So I would be at least giving him tonight and Saturday night. And depending on that, I mean, the Kraken are bottom of the league. I could see maybe Mrazek getting that one if Jack has two really strong games and has to face a lot of shots. But that's my approach to it, is get him back into a rhythm, get that confidence up, give him a couple good games under his belt, and you know, then you can sprinkle in Mrazek and start getting that routine in.
I'd agree with that for sure. And like, I think you also want to find out where Jack's at, because like there was that stretch of time in December where you could have chalked it up to, oh, Jack's tired, Jack's worn down. Mm-hmm. Maybe even a little bit in that late January slump that he had. He's played 9 games since December 14th. So that's like 9 games over the last 2 months. I would say more now it's get him in a rhythm than worry about his workload.
For sure.
Like he's had a pretty good stretch of rest here. I also just think that they showed what they would do, that game where he got pulled and then he was back in the net the next night. All of the comments around that and that decision suggests to me that, yeah, he would have to do more to lose that spot, especially, JD, I know for you the Hockey Night in Canada games on Saturday nights are a big one. And like you said, Mrazek's had a few in a row. So, yeah, I think he probably starts both of these. And then, Ailish, like you said, Kraken as the one game before you get a better team in the Penguins seems like a pretty natural Mrazek spot.
See, I didn't ask this question because of workload or rest or any of those things. So,
it's merit.
To be honest, I think we all know at this point that Jack should be plenty rested, that he should not be worn down, and we no longer. When's the last time someone referenced his whole, oh, and Jack only started this many games in his career in a season versus how many?
That's long gone.
When he broke it, when he beat it, and then it's not a topic anymore, right?
But that's what I mean. But not only that, it's not a topic anymore because he's plenty rested. The issue right now should not be his physical state. It's purely his mental state. And all I'll say is, you could make the case that you have to give him the Saturday night game because it shows a sign of confidence in him and you don't want to rattle him. You can also be a little rattled by the idea of you get shelled tonight and then you get shelled on Saturday in a national game. Like, I'm not saying that that's the reason why you don't start him Saturday night. I'm only making that point to illustrate how when we're talking about someone who might be shaky or who might be on the verge of something where there's a drop-off and you're concerned about where they're at mentally, you can play out a multitude of scenarios, right? There's not just one thing of, well, if you certainly play him Saturday, then he's going to feel better about himself. These things can have a compounding effect. The Leafs are not going to fall out of the postseason standings, obviously. They're not even going to fall out of the top of the conference standings. All of those games are going to be determined by how they do against Florida and Tampa and Boston down the stretch. Those games are going to be little mini-series for who ends up getting home ice advantage. All those teams are likely going to be in the mix where those ones will matter. So this isn't a you-need-these-regular-season-wins scenario. But for Jack Campbell, this is, again, the first time in his career where he has faced some level of adversity with the Toronto Maple Leafs. It has been very much a gravy train for him. He's played great. He set a record for most consecutive wins. He was certainly not the guy that this market blamed in the postseason, right? Not even close. He blamed himself, and everyone threw a shield around him of, Jack, don't blame yourself. Blame Mitch Marner, you know? Blame everyone else but you. He started the season incredibly well. He made the All-Star team. But it does remind me a little bit of the year Freddie Anderson made his last All-Star game where he was brilliant to start and it started to slow down and there was some roller coaster ride and that roller coaster ride sort of continued. So for Jack Campbell, he does have to get right. I think you guys are correct that it's very likely that he gets both of these games, but I'd like for Jack Campbell on a night where Calgary's on a back-to-back to not force us to have that conversation tomorrow, right? Just to have us know automatically that he let in less than three, to be honest. Three or more, and it's a conversation. Less than three tonight, and you have that net Saturday, and everything's hunky-dory, and all of a sudden you've got two in a row, you came off the All-Star break, and this isn't a story for a while.
Yeah. I agree. Okay. I think that we're on the same page. I'm looking forward to seeing how he bounces back. I also think that maybe there's a little bit about being at the All-Star game and, like, you know, having that confidence boost about yourself. Like, that's a huge accolade for someone for your first time, and you got to have some fun, but you also got to live in the moment. Like, he seems super grateful, and also maybe that gives you a little bit of a swagger. You know, you're just coming off a really cool thing in your career. Maybe you want to propel your season even further, but one will have to wait till this evening to find out.
Yeah. Just the other goalie was in net for the identity game of the season so far. I know that's recency, bias, mm-hmm. whatever. Biases and everything. But yes, the most recent game you played your ex-goaltender, and you played a really tough game at home and beat them. And Mrazek, not spectacular, let in a soft goal for sure, but still won and came up with some big stops late. And he was in net for that game. So, Jack, it's not a win your net back scenario, but it certainly is a win the confidence back of the market that you are certainly the number one guy. And do not leave this up for debate or discussion over the next month of who ends up being the top guy. Let's take a break, but before that, it's time for Something to Chew On, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Blake, I believe you have one for us today.
Sure. It's a little bit of this. I was going to try to slide it into the Ailish, but your Something to Chew On today is a little numerology for Ailish, who I know is a big fan of the number 27. You ready?
Yeah.
LeBron James, in his career, has averaged 27.1 points, 7.5 rebounds, 7.4 assists. So 27, 7, and 7.
Ooh.
He's had 10 seasons averaging between 26 and 28 points, 7 seasons between 6.5 and 7.5 rebounds, 9 seasons between 6.5 and 7.5 assists. Basically, LeBron, his entire career, has been a 27, 7, and 7 guy. He has never had a single night where he actually had 27, 7, and 7 exactly. 32 Whoa. Times he's been within one digit of it. 17 times during LeBron's career, someone else has had that stat line. Last night, there are 0.2 seconds left in that game. LeBron is sitting on 27, 7, and 7, hits a completely pointless buzzer-beating three, ruins the weird stat anomaly.
Aw, buddy.
Something to chew on here. Well, first of all, is the Lakers are bad and irredeemably Oof. Bad, and LeBron's in stat getting mode at the end of games at this point. But also, maybe LeBron, not a believer in numerology, and hates the number 27, Ailish?
That's pretty rude of him.
I am so sad about the Lakers. I grew up hating the Lakers. Truly. My
the
most despised
more fun
team,
when they're good.
My most despised team. Well, I wouldn't have even agreed with that. If you would have gone and asked 12-year-old JD, is the league more fun when the Lakers are good? He would have told you, absolutely not. I hate the Lakers.
Adult JD, though, would say that it's more fun to hate a good team than like a bad one, right?
When Shaq went to the Lakers, I cried. I loved Shaq. I was so sad. One of my favorite players went to the Lakers. Of all the teams, the Lakers. Just why? Why, sports gods? Now, I just care about LeBron James. I just care about the player of my lifetime. It's not Michael Jordan. He was the player of my childhood. The player of my lifetime is LeBron James. And I keep waiting for something to happen with the Lakers where one weird guy emerges, right? There's that Austin Reeves guy, and he's had some nights where I go, maybe he's going to be a thing. And Malik Monk has a moment every once in a while where I go, okay, well, maybe Malik Monk, and you can piece this thing together. And there for a while was, well, maybe when Anthony Davis comes back. Anthony Davis last night goes up against a team full of absolute nobodies, and during the meaningful minutes, I don't know what he finished with, because maybe he got some garbage time stuff or he hit a couple shots at the end. He had 17 points in a game where they needed him. And I go, I watched a bunch of that game. Pathetic performance by him. Truly pathetic. And Russell Westbrook takes all the heat. Russell Westbrook didn't play last night. He had all of a sudden mystery lower back tightness after being held out of a fourth quarter where he goes to a podium and complains openly about the head coach not playing him at the very end. Anthony Davis Blake just put it in the doc, 17-7-6 with 11 shots when LeBron James is laying it all out there against a Portland team that was doing the Oklahoma City Thunder of there's five guys in the rotation tonight that I've never heard of before, and they're beating your ass, and you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. It's an absolute travesty what's happening from a basketball standpoint in LA right now. To see LeBron James potentially championship window close when he's clearly still good. He might not be, I don't think LeBron is the force that he once was where he's an automatic W every night. He owns some of this too, but he owns less of it considering he's 36 years old and has the miles that he has and is still the best player on his team. Part of the succession plan with AD was that he was going to take over and become the team's best player. And right now, there are nights where I go, Austin Reeves is better than you. Malik Monk is better than you. Talen Horton Tucker, the legend who you couldn't trade for Kyle Lowry for, is better than you. I hate Anthony Davis. I truly hate him. I hate his guts. He's so brutal. He's so soft. He breaks down all the time. And it's all Russell Westbrook taking all this heat. Where is street clothes? Where is this guy that was supposed to cry his way out of New Orleans, gets a championship on LeBron's back in the bubble, and people in the NBA circles are vaunting him into, is this the next Tim Duncan category? Is he the next KG category? Loser. Killing the end of LeBron James's career. Killing it. Stop it, AD. Show 1 ounce of toughness. My God, it's brutal. I hate it.
So fired up something Whew. To chew on today. That was something to chew
That's
on
right.
from Great Canadian Meats. We're going to take a break. We're going to chew on some more Leaf stuff with our pal Kipper after break. We got Michael Grange coming on at 8 to talk more Raptors deadline stuff. RG3 and Cassie Campbell later in the show as well. So stick around. It's the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590, The Fan.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Toronto sports fans. The Fan Morning Show with JD, Blake, and Ailish. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan. Ailish Forvar, JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Baby Friday, Super Bowl Sunday approaching. Leafs are back in action, headed to the West Coast. Might Yuck. Be close to a full, not good for our sleep schedule.
I always forget.
But might be good to almost be back to full strength. Let's bring in Nick Kyprios, former NHL forward and co-host of Real Kipper and Born. How are you this morning?
Good morning. How are you?
You sound different.
Yeah, you know what? I'm traveling, so I apologize for the sound, but we'll give it a try anyways.
Yeah, thank you for apologizing. We were waiting for the apology. I was going to say, did we just ruin vacation for you? Because I realized that today I'm going in and co-hosting your show for an hour. Do you feel like you're going to get Wally Pipp by me? Do you feel as though my perspective on your show could cost you future earnings? Like, how are you feeling about the pressure of me as the fill-in on Real Kipper and Bourne later today?
I look at it the same way as I see Marty St. Louis. You're on a tryout. You're interim. We don't know how it's going to turn out. It could blow up in our faces, and we'll readjust on Monday.
Yeah, that's feeling good. Yeah, so I hope we're not blowing up your spot, right? You're doing this willingly, right? This isn't now. Tell us that you're happy to be here, that this isn't a contractual obligation, please.
Really happy to be here. Just a huge smile
Thank
on
you.
My face. That's what it's all about.
Thank you, as you rip through an airport, I guess. I don't know where you are, but as you're moving around. I love it. Yeah, so yeah, later today, Real Kipper and Bourne filling in for Kipper. So I apologize in advance to the fans. So let's get the Kipper, let's get the good Kipper takes today. Let's get them in another way. So you're traveling, the Leafs are traveling. What's on your mind as they head out west?
Well, I just think the challenge right now of shutting down one of the best lines in hockey and Lindholm, Tkachuk, and, of course, Johnny Hockey, Goudreau. This is going to be a big challenge for that blue line, particularly Brody, Morgan Rielly. He's going to have to pick his spots, when to jump up on the play, and when to be on the right side of the puck against those three guys. They've got tremendous chemistry. They read and react really well. And, you know, while we look at Marner and Matthews and Bunting, they've been going really well. But they're based more on great individual skill. These guys, they work well and gel together. The giving goes, and being an ability to read and react. They're one of the best in the league right now.
So what do you expect to see, or what do you want to see with the return of Jake Muzzin? It sounds like he should be back in the lineup after the head injury and missing about six games there. He's had a little bit of a lengthier rest due to that. What do you expect to see, and when do you give him a little bit of a buffer time to be back to what we hope is full strength?
Well, I hope that we get to see it on the road trip, whether it's Calgary or Vancouver, Seattle. But you expect to see one of the better shutdown guys in the league, and he certainly paid like that, and you expect him to bring it every night. He just hasn't hit a level that I think the Leafs management has been accustomed to seeing in the past. And if this is what it took for him, a month off to feel good and feel like he can come in and really lead that shutdown role for the Toronto Maple Leafs, then they'll be fine. If it's not, it's a huge concern, because the physical level that drops off after Muzzin is still very concerning to I think Leaf fans and the management. What can they do between now and the trade deadline to fix it? It's a challenge, as Kyle Dubas said earlier when he met the media.
19 games between now and the deadline. Mm-hmm. How far into that do you feel like you'll be comfortable making a judgment on whether Muzzin can get back to where he was before? And, you know, if you can get comfortable with that, what are the kind of indicators in his play you're looking for?
Well, I just think a physical presence. He can hit, and he's great open ice. And open ice is one of the hardest things to do in hockey. Make an open ice body check. And he has been in the past one of the better guys at doing that and closing gaps. And again, I know it's a cliche, but being on the right side of the puck, not chasing an opponent towards your net, that's the type of game that earned him a contract that almost pays him $6 million a year. And I want to see that on this road trip. If I don't see it, then they've got to start asking some serious questions on what's going on with Jake Muzzin.
How tough is that after a head injury, though, is just resuming the same amount of physicality?
I think it's such an individual thing, JD. I can't tell you definitively. You know, some guys are able to brush it off and get right back in there, and other guys, there's a little bit of a hesitation. And maybe that's probably maybe one of the concerns with Jake Muzzin is that he hasn't really felt himself for quite a while, and he's having troubles adjusting again. But time's running out. We're in the back half of the season now, and the Leafs, I think it's important to try to win the division with the games in hand. I think you'd rather see one of Florida and Tampa Bay and not both of them, because we do know that those teams have a reputation for being a lot more physical than the Toronto Maple Leafs. And for the Leafs to get to a conference final or Stanley Cup final, there's going to be some serious wear and tear. So the best way to avoid that or minimize it is win your division.
So you mentioned that Muzzin needs to kind of get back into a groove. I think the same goes with Jack Campbell. We were touching on it about these upcoming three games on the road, and we're under the consensus, I think, here that he should get tonight's start and Saturday's start just to get him back in a groove, because I think that was mainly the reason that he was off over the last month or so, is that he wasn't fully playing in the same amount of routine that he was before. Do you agree with the two starts here? Get him in a better situation, maybe give Mrazek the Kraken game on the Monday, and then just to get Jack feeling a little bit more confident?
Ailish, I think you look no further than tonight's game. And I certainly agree with that. We were speaking that with Justin on our show yesterday. I think it's the biggest start of his season tonight, because it comes off an all-star weekend. It comes off the fact that his numbers and his play has leveled off somewhat. And now we're in a situation where we're going to see if he can get right back on the horse again and hit that level that we saw in the first half of the season. If he lets in three goals on nine shots and gets pulled, he doesn't start in Vancouver. That's where Peter Mrazek's play and the win the other night would earn him that spot Saturday night. And again, he's paid almost $4 million a year, Peter Mrazek. And if you feel like he's hit a groove, you don't sit on that till Seattle. But that all depends on Jack Campbell's start tonight. And you look no further than how he looks in the first 20 minutes. And if Jack is Jack, then in all probability, you're right. He gets the start against Vancouver.
Yeah, okay. I think you're right, Kipper. And I was trying not to be hot takey with it, or maybe I was a little reserved to say what you just said. But yeah, coming from you, it definitely adds way more credibility to that thought, which is, yeah, tonight's a huge game for Jack. And we've been doing that for a while now, where we keep going, hey, tonight's a big game for Jack. Tonight's a big game for Jack. That's what happens when you're in a slump, right? That's what happens when your goaltender does have somebody credible behind him and he's not performing up to his best abilities. But yeah, all those things that you just outlined, they feel big. And I wonder if, looking back at this, I know that he was in Vegas, and he had to do the travel and get back in the net. But you know who else did that? Austin Matthews, and he ripped a couple of big goals in that game against Carolina. Do you think it was a bit of a mistake not to play him in that game? Like, that was a high-intensity, high-leverage game.
No.
No? Okay, so then you still like the decision to go with Mrazek there.
Yeah, and again, ex-team, you've got to get this guy going. You have to show that you didn't waste $4 million of your cap on a guy that you barely play. So it was important for Mrazek to get that win and build momentum. You know, I've talked to enough top goalies in the National Hockey League over my career. And, you know, there's that psychological effect where Jack in the first half was almost playing with house money. It was the great unknown. How is Jack going to act as a number one goalie? Well, he did pretty good in the first half. But now there's a psychological switch where we're not asking the question, how are you going to do? Now we're asking, like, when are you going to do it again? Because it's expected now. And Jack has to play with that he's expected to play like he did in the first half. That's much different than starting the season and collecting these chips if you're at a blackjack table, you know? So now Jack has to hit that level psychologically, and we'll see how he reacts as early as tonight.
So if he doesn't react well, do you trust Mrazek to be the guy down the stretch? Like, is he someone that the Leafs can rely on?
It's too early. Yeah, Ailish, it's too early for that. With over 40 games to go here, they're going to have an opportunity to battle it out. And I think that's the picture that they wanted, or they at least set it up for at the beginning of the season, was that these guys were going to go maybe a split of, you know, 55-45 or 50-50 or 60-40 if somebody gets hot. So they are closer to that. I believe that Jack's bonafide number one, and I don't expect his play to fall off the face of the earth. But it did slide in 2 weeks before the All-Star break, and maybe that's pushing them towards maybe backing off a little bit more and getting Mrazek ready in case you need him. And you worry about that maybe 10-15 games left in the regular season. Right now, it's a lot of hockey to go. Even if Jack has an average to below average game tonight, there's still going to be some really good battles, I think, between Mrazek and Campbell to fight for supremacy.
All right, so Marchand, my guy, I can't believe it. I love him. I love him to death. I thought that the play behind the net on listen, he has the great play behind the net where he slaps the puck out of his stick trying to give it to a fan, which I love. Hard to love sticking the blade in Jari's face, but he gets the punishment. He's going to lose $1.4 million, Kipper. $1.4 mil. That's a chunk. That's a chunk of change. Do you think that this is actually one where the Bruins are kind of at the end of this championship window that they have, I would say anyway, where, hey, this actually does create some kind of a change with Marchand. It's, I don't even know what's it's like. The seventh time he's been disciplined. This is a pretty heavy suspension. You got to be a little bit more careful now, or no, this is just Marchand being Marchand. He's never going to change, and we just got to love him for it.
I'm sorry, did we have this conversation like a few years ago? We inserted Kadri's name. That's what you're saying. You're saying the Boston Bruins are fed up like the Leafs were with Kadri. Get rid of him.
No. Come on. No one's ever getting rid of Marchand. He's one of the best players in the NHL. That's the thing.
Then just accept it for what it is, then. This guy plays on the edge.
I love him.
And he's going to get suspended, and sometimes it's going to get ugly. And if they miss the playoffs because of it, so what? Then just get ready for next year. This guy has helped you make a lot of money with playoff gates. So it's just a part of doing Brad Marchand business. And you'll debate if he's good for the game, bad for the game, if he's classless, whatever. Go talk on it amongst yourselves on social media. And mm-hmm. when he's ready to play, I still want one of the best left wingers in the NHL on my team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say that there were a lot of surprising things during the pandemic for me. I learned about myself. Learning that that Brad Marchand is my favorite player was a shocking development. That it was just, I didn't know. It hurts, but his stance on Team Canada, the way that he plays every night, that it is on the edge. I actually didn't view that one as so bad. I didn't view it as the worst thing ever. Like, yeah, it doesn't look great optically. And I know, again, when you're talking about Twitter, someone will hammer me for that.
JD, if it wasn't Brad Marchand, we'd be debating whether or not it's a one or two game.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like that was a pretty no big deal thing to me, and even the little rabbit punch. Like, I don't know, man. I just think whatever.
It's one or two games.
Exactly. It was such a whatever play. There's so many dangerous things that actually happen in hockey. Little rabbit punches and sticking a stick in a goaltender's mask to me was pretty low event. Pretty no big dealish to me. Some people hate Marchand. Maybe I'm looking at it through the lens of I'm his number one fan now because he stuck up for going to the Olympics. But yeah, I thought no big deal. And I just think, he... that it seemed very, 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 very steep. Did you ever get fined? You ever get a big old fine? I know you didn't get $1.4 million, like otherwise, you wouldn't be taking any vacations. You'd be doing extra work right now. But like no fines.
Well, he's up around. I think he's close to 30 career suspended games now. I was at eight. I was the low. Nice. I was low. I think.
Yeah, eight.
But I probably lost about 50 grand.
Yeah.
But not Marchand money. But I'm with you. I loved when he stole Jari's puck.
Oh, the best.
It was, but drop the mic and leave. And I tweeted, I love that. I mean, that's the personality I want to see during NHL All-Star Weekend. Not mm-hmm. the Michigan.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but he went. He went double down at the end of the game, and he blew it. He blew it. Now he's suspended 6 games, and everybody thinks he's a piece of crud again. That's life if you're Brad Marchand.
I can't get enough. I'll say, Kipper, I'm totally with you. I've always said that if hockey just wants to be skill game alone, that it's going to always suffer, that it's never going to be as popular as the sport should be, because other sports are just skill-based alone, right? Like, you look at the NBA, it's going to beat you in that. It's head-to-head. You're going to go skill for skill, then that's what people are going to watch. You need to have bite. You need to have Marchands in your league. And are there going to be times where it upsets a few people? Sure, but for the most part, I think that most people like the way Marchand plays. And I think that 99% of real hockey fans, not like the just Twitter hockey fan, that they'd kill for that guy on their team, or they'd kill for someone to be like that on their team. What have most hockey fans been asking more of Matthews this year, right? He's this perfect goal scorer. He's a physical specimen. He's just about everything that you'd ever want, except for what? One thing. People always say, wish he had a little bit more bite. Wish he had a little bit more jam. Wish he'd cross-check somebody once in a while. Wish he would just, take a fine once in a while. Who wouldn't love to see Austin Matthews take a fine in this city? Really? Everybody. I'd love to see Matthews take a fine. It would be better than a goal at this point during the regular season. So, I love Marchand. I think that if you're a Bruins fan, you're thrilled.
Yeah, throw Tavares' name in there, too, with a fine and a suspension and a cross check. But say what you will. Of course, we marvel at the skill, and Marchand has it. He also has that. He has that card. But go look around and see the best-selling jerseys in the NHL. Tom Wilson and Brad Marchand right up there with the big boys.
Kipper, you can go now. Wherever you're going, tropical vacation, I'm sure, somewhere gorgeous, Mai Tais, I don't know, whatever it is. You deserve it. Have a little boot on me today. Yeah, you can have a little boot on me, you know?
A little warmer than this this place, that's for sure.
Okay, perfect.
Thanks, guys.
To hear it, buddy. See you, Kipper.
Okay.
I'm still waiting to have a little Buddha.
They're good. The pineapple one is really good. Like, really good.
Just don't put it on your pizza, right?
Yeah, no. Oh. Otherwise, people will tweet at you. Yeah. Rabble.
Rabble.
You don't eat things that
so
I don't
what,
eat.
So what is it, by the way?
What?
A little Buddha? Like, I know it's Kipper's drink company, but, like, what type of drink is it?
It's a little cocktail.
Oh, okay.
Is it a vodka cocktail?
Like it's a flavored keto vodka friendly. Soda?
Yes, it's certified organic, zero sugar, keto friendly, under 90 calories, crafted with premium vodka.
Yes, I personally, I'm pineapple over peach, but both are very, very good. I'm a big fan of it. Yeah, what did you guys think about Marchand? Because you didn't really talk about it, and you guys are both pretty soft, so I'm guessing that it upsets you.
You think I'm soft?
You're the one who's every day in the A-list like, oh, and someone wrote a children's book. No, that's really tough guy material right there.
I like how he plays. You know, I think the league needs more people that are just, I'm going to own that this is the type of player I am. I do think that it was a bit of a unnecessary cheap shot. Like goaltending, you don't touch goaltenders. You know, I just think there's a different world around them. Like, you know, behind the net, if you were to even just like nudge a goaltender, it's a big deal. They're your goaltender. I mean, if you did this to another player, different story. I think that is why I was like, unnecessary. You don't need to do that. I like that he plays on the edge. I like that he's chippy. I think that even over the last month, we've talked about him a few times about just like doing little petty stuff in the social media world. Like he's owned into his little rat personality, but I just think that you don't need to do that to a goaltender. That's just maybe that makes me a little bit soft, but you gotta respect the goaltending.
It's okay. You
are. You don't look. You want guys like that who play on the edge a little bit and push the envelope. I do think a stick to the head at close range to a goalie like that is. I guess it was more
probably not
to the head
needed.
Of it. Yeah, that's a little too far. Like if we're talking about taking the puck or after all that, he's brushing his hair back as he skates past Jari again. Like that kind of heel work is good. It just don't put the goalie at risk. Here's the other thing is if I'm the Boston Bruins, I'm so fed up with this that I would just dump him to a team like Toronto for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Just
free.
You know, eat as much of the salary as you can, get recoup like a seventh or something like that, and just be done with the Marchand thing.
Yeah, I think he grew up a Leafs fan. And I say that because I'm pretty sure just about everybody grew up a Leafs fan, which is one of my favorite things that Leaf fans do. They go, did you know that this guy liked the Leafs growing up? Yeah, probably. They're the biggest hockey team on earth. Half of the world's hockey fandom is the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I agree with that take, Blake. But I don't care if it's the goalie or a player and whatever. The stick was not – he didn't try to Chris Simon him. He sticks the stick up in his grill as here's the blade of it. I don't know. I just
punch
think
him in
so,
the head, though, also.
Yeah, it was a baby little rabbit punch. Like, honest to God, some of these
That's
things
just
with, like –
he's in the, yeah, I don't know.
I know, but it's just like these head injury people. Oh, concussion Twitter. Oh, he gave a goalie a rabbit punch. Ooh, at Tristan Jarry, dig him a grave. You know, that's the – us soccer fans that we chant dig a hole and bury him. Dig a hole and bury him. Oh, poor Tristan Jarry. Little rabbit punch from old Brad Marchand. Dig a hole and bury him. It was fine. You guys are babies.
Ground
You're
pound.
Soft. Yeah,
Ground
it's okay. It's okay. Yeah. Watch the UFC, but don't see Brad Marchand do a little tiny rabbit punch.